Hi, I'm Christine, and welcome to XOXO Christine, where we have honest and candid conversations about transformations, breakthroughs, and how we live our best life right now. We'll get from the I'm not good enough and I don't know what I'm doing, to knowing and embracing your own self-worth, and fully stepping into your purpose. Yes! Hi, and welcome back to XOXO Christine. I'm Christine, and before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to leave a warning, I guess a trigger warning, just because of today's topic. It can be a very sensitive issue for a lot of people, and I just wanted to be considerate and thoughtful of anyone that has encountered sexual abuse, harassment, just any of those really traumatic experiences. Just know that you're not alone. And the intention behind this topic was really because I felt growing up, no one really talked about this. And even now, just wanting to start that discussion so that we can have a place to heal for those of us who find it therapeutic to talk about it and share our experiences. So thank you guys so much, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. This is a topic that I've wanted to do forever, but I think it's such a big topic and there's so much behind it that I know today we're just barely scratching the surface. Let me first introduce our guest and then I'll jump into what we're talking about today. So my guest, oh my God, I love her so much. I know a lot of you actually have reached out to me saying that you also are a huge fan of hers and you also listen to her podcast. I got to know my guest a couple years ago.
I think it's been longer.
Right? Yeah.
I think it's been more like 4 or 5.
God, it just passes by.
Yeah, that's what happens after 30.
Yeah. Honestly, she's one of the people that once I met her, it just like the instant connection. It honestly feels like every time we talk, it's like soul sister to the max. Like she gets it. She takes it to the next level. And I'm always so inspired by her. She's such a huge part of the community, a leader, inspirational figure. She's always out there grinding, hustling, and the amount of things that she takes on, her vulnerability and just her whole essence is just what I completely admire and love about her as a person, not only a woman, but just her whole being and spirit. Oh. So I want to welcome Minji.
Hi, Christine. And also everything you said right back at you.
Oh, thank you. See, this is why we really love each other.
We do. It's a very genuine love.
Yes.
Thank you for having me on your show.
No, of course. I honestly wouldn't want anybody else to do this topic other than you. I'm sure, of course, we'll do future episodes together.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, because there's always so much that we talk about. And given that Minji is one of my favorite people on this planet, that we always have such great conversations.
Oh, I'm so honored.
No, of course. So today's topic, after all of that, right? But I think that's a good energy. I know. That's a good energy to go into this topic, even though it's a heavy topic. But it's something with the right energy is met with a good way to start the discussion. So today's topic, and I don't even know how to summarize it, to be honest. But I wanted us to talk about things that we wish we knew growing up as girls and women that we learned the hard way. Mm-hmm. So it encompasses all these things that we might talk about, and there might be future episodes, but talking about harassment, sexual abuse, sexuality, mm-hmm. all these things that growing up as young girls and women, at least on my end, I felt like no one ever told me.
Yeah.
Like no one ever prepared me. Sex education, that one class like in middle school, taught me nothing.
Thanks, California. No.
Seriously, you know, it's like growing up as women, especially as Asian Americans, given our culture, given our background, and then entering into dating and growing into our own bodies and the changes and being objectified is a huge part of being a woman. You know, how do you take that? What is your identity from that? Does that even have anything to do with your identity? Now that age 30, I'm reflecting on it. I'm like, that doesn't define me, you know? But we learned that the hard way. And so excited that because of #MeToo and Time's Up movement recently and all these empowering female movements that have been happening, there's been more discussions that are opening up.
Yeah. Including this one.
Including this one. Yeah. And this is something that talking to my female friends, the commonality is that we've endured and suffer silently alone for a really long time.
Yeah.
And still do. And I know men do too. I'm not trying to exclude men from the conversation as well. You guys also have things that you guys suffer alone and feel like, you know, you can't speak about it and don't know how to process it. But I do believe that it's just starting the conversation and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So wanted to start with our general thoughts and experiences of growing up as a woman, as a girl, and also as an Asian American in America. So Minji, how did you grow up as a girl in your family? And what were some of the cultural boundaries or things that you were told you could or couldn't do?
Yeah, I'm a child of the 80s, you know, embracing my age, which is also part of the discussion of sexuality or when, you know, people are desirable. There's been a stigma of wanting to always be this fountain of youth and always being really, really young. So I say that I'm in my 30s very proudly because it's kind of the best part of my life so far.
Yes.
But I grew up in the Bay Area in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's a very diverse part of the country, but Korean American family. And I have an older brother. So I'm a big believer that your placement in your family, it influences a lot of how you become and whether you have like a big brother, you have a big sister, how far apart in age, you know, those, all these little details about ourselves influence the way we take in the world. And for me, having a big brother was like one of the best, most prideful points of my life. When I was younger, I just felt like I had this shield of armor that no one can mess with me because my big brother will handle that, which is funny because he was kind of a bully to me, but that's kind of part of the deal. But in that, I was like, when I was really young, I was very, very girly. And then when I, after age 5 or 6, I suddenly became really tomboyish and like wore my brother's clothes and I didn't want to wear dresses. Like it's, you know, every kid kind of goes through different phases of how they self-identify. And I don't think I necessarily wanted to be a boy, but I was just, I was a tomboy. Like, that's the best way to put it. And I took a lot of pride in being able to hang with the boys. I don't know how conscious that was. There's specific years of my life where I was like all pink, all glitter, all Barbie, all dresses. And then at some point, everything stopped. And I was just like, where's my Stussy shirt or my Quicksilver, you know, shorts? And like these pants were so big on me, but I thought they looked cool. Just weird. I don't know where that influence came from.
No, but that was the culture. That was what was cool then, the baggy shirts, the baggy pants, even for girls. You know, so totally relate to you there.
Yeah. You're a tomboy too, right? We've talked about this.
Yeah. I think for a while, everything you said about like being able to hang out with like the guys, you kind of had to have that personality, right? Because not all girls can hang with the guys. And some of the guys are like, ugh, get out of here, you know? So took pride in that. And then it wasn't necessarily that I wanted to be a guy, but I guess I wanted to be cool enough that I'm not one of those girls.
Right.
One of those girls that
So we're already getting an early intro into like wanting approval from guys, from men.
Oh my God, to take it there. See, this is why she's here. Exactly.
But the funny thing is I was a super tomboy, but I was also really boy crazy. Like, when did you start liking boys? I started liking them since I was like 4.
I remember having a crush in kindergarten, but I don't think I knew what that meant. I think it's just like, oh, I like to be around him.
Yeah, it's very cute and innocent.
Right. To carry that over in even into middle school, high school, that's what I thought about having a boyfriend. You know, it's very innocent.
Just being near them.
Yeah, just being, or just like wanting to hold hands and, you know, there's nothing sexual about it. It was just like, hey, I like being around you. And that was it. I mean, we'll go into this later, but talking to Jack and other male friends about what they thought as they were growing up as boys and men is completely different.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had no idea until, I guess, like, actually recently when we dived into what middle school boys were actually doing and thinking when it came to their sexuality.
Yeah, it's a little bit much.
Yeah, so I think that was a big eye-opener for me to hear it from the guys and boys' perspective.
For sure.
So then as you grew older and when you're boy crazy and all of that, like what age was that?
It was interesting because I feel like I started liking boys really young. I actually started approaching my poor father and mother. I started kind of approaching guys or talking to them, even in like second grade. I remember I actually rehearsed a phone call with my older brother. I was like wanting to invite my crush from class to my birthday party. I started taking those steps of like approaching boys that I liked from a pretty young age. Ooh. And so that was a really interesting thing for me. And I know that not everyone's like that. A lot of my friends have gone through their sexual awakening at a different age. Some of them are really, you know, late bloomers, quote unquote, till like late high school, college, even sometimes in their 20s. But for me, I feel like I was introduced to that concept and that practice, like that dance, that special dance between you and your crush pretty early on. And I went through puberty really early when I was like just after I turned 10.
Wow, that's like fifth grade.
It was really early. Yeah, fifth grade. And so it's actually, I got my period and all that stuff. I started getting boobs and everything before I learned sex ed.
Wow.
So it was a really interesting time to look back on and to recall what was influencing me, because it was a mix of like hardcore American pop culture of like MTV, and Clueless was a huge hit in 95,
yeah.
You know, like I love that movie, and I wanted to be Cher because she looks so cute in that like mini skirt, but I was still a tomboy at the time. So it was a very confusing time where like I leaned heavily on pop culture to educate me. Mm-hmm. And because there, like you said, there were no, my elders did not educate me in any sort of fashion. My mom asked me in this Korean word, but I kind of just figured out what it meant. But she asked if I like started my mens and then that's menstruation, I guess like Korean word for that. But I was scared to like ask her like, what does that mean?
Well, how did you feel when your body started to go through changes and your period came?
When my period came, this is the thing about having a mother, right? This is why I think, you know, kids are very smart too. We figure out a lot of things. And so my mom had her feminine products at home that I saw, and that's what I figured out. So I didn't actually really freak out when I got my period. I was like, oh, that's what my mom, this makes sense.
Oh.
Because I'm bleeding, but my mom has these like big cotton pad thingies, and like I had studied them one day. I was like, what the hell is this? Like,
yeah.
So in my mind, I was pretty smart about it, and I didn't freak out, and I was wearing like overalls that day. I just like padded my way down the hall to the office.
Yeah.
And I told the nurse, like, oh, I'm bleeding. Uh-huh. And so she's like, she knew and she took care of me. So that's how it was weirdly kind of like I felt grown up. Like I was like, oh, I figured this out, you know?
So your mom never told you about that?
No.
Like never prepared you for one day when this happens?
Right. And who knows? I've never asked my mom when she went through puberty. So maybe she went through it later in life. So she didn't know that I was going to start mine that early. I don't know.
That's so true. I guess I never thought about like, I never asked my mom either when she started.
Yeah.
You know, if she even had that conversation with her mom.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure. I'm like 99% sure she never did.
Yeah.
Were you early bloomer or?
I would say sixth grade is when it came. So I wasn't too long after you. My boobs never came in. So like I didn't have as many body changes. Like today I still tell Jack, I'm like, I have a body of like a 13-year-old boy, you know?
No, Christine.
Like my height, like I've been this height since like fifth grade.
Ditto.
So yeah, yes. I remember when it came, I still can visualize it right now, that I think throughout the day it came. I just remember it didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And then my stomach hurt a lot. And then when I got home, like, ta-da.
Yeah.
And I started crying.
Oh.
I remember I was in the bathroom and I just started crying because I was so scared. I thought I did something wrong.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I didn't know. I didn't think that I was dying. I was just more of like, oh my God, like this isn't right. I grew up in a very conservative Christian household.
Right.
Yeah. I told my mom and she made it very serious as in like, oh, okay. Oh, you know, and she didn't prep me either about it. At least I don't think so. But I remember since then, everything, I guess, from middle school to high school, my hormones kicked in. That's probably what I remember the most about puberty.
Yeah.
Just haywire. I was feeling a lot of things and not knowing why I felt them.
Yeah.
And feeling angst, feeling anger, feeling bottled up emotions. I don't know if like, did your hormones affect you in any way?
I think so. I mean, actually, it's funny because I came out of the womb just a really sensitive, emotional person. So probably for me, it wasn't that much of a difference. Just like a little bit, like crying a little bit more. I don't know. I cried a lot prior to puberty. So there is a sexual awakening. And right around the time of puberty, I mean, I won't throw anybody under the bus here, but I did see like porn for the first time when I was around fifth, sixth grade.
What?
And
really?
Yeah.
I mean, you had an older brother. I mean, not to, I had an older not brother. To say, we're not saying that it was him, but you know.
Well, yeah. Let's just be real. I mean, but like even, well, so he was, I was 10, he was 13. And like, they would talk about girls, you know, and they would talk about, oh, look at her. And it's kids, again, they're very smart. So whether you tell them or not, they're still sponging in the world. Yeah, you know what I mean? So I knew what men were attracted to because I saw it all the time on TV. Mm-hmm. You hear about it in music. Mm-hmm. Like, I listen a lot to lyrics too. So like, I would listen to love songs. Like, I listen to Boys to Men. Like, I'll make love to you. I didn't know what make love means. Yeah. But then I, over time, figured it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There are all these different things that cued my curiosity and then my understanding. And then the internet hits and like, bam, like, you know, there's just questions you have. And if no one's going to answer them for you, like someone that can guide you, mm-hmm. you're going to figure it out, whether by osmosis or, you know, by looking it up. Yeah. Do you want to leave it? So that's also a warning for all the future parents. As uncomfortable as it may be, do you want the internet to educate your children?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's pros and cons. And now it's a little bit different because I feel like there's a lot of like great
information
out there. But back then it was pretty sketchy. And I was very curious about sex. I was attracted to boys for many years at that point. So I was just like, I hadn't done anything, but I felt that chemistry. And that's something that's always intrigued me mm-hmm. because it affects us so much. Mm-hmm. You see that one person at that moment, like I had multiple crushes, but you see that one person, they completely dismantle you, you know?
Totally. No, I remember middle school. It was very much like that. I wrote in my diary like 5 different names that I like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, I love Bobby and, you know, David and blah, blah, blah.
And rank them and like whatever, say why they're so great.
Yeah. And that's the part where, you know, looking back now, I mean, when you said that you're really smart and you like, you know, started to absorb all this information, you were looking for it. I didn't figure that out until my first boyfriend in high school, I think sophomore year. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be real, that's when I lost my virginity. But I didn't know. I still remember the first time I was like, what is going on? Like I said, I grew up in a very conservative Christian environment. I felt like I was sinning. I cried.
Yeah.
I cried.
Yeah,
I'm
me
just
too.
Like, this is not right. This is not what I should be doing. And everything that I learned about it was from him. And I had no idea other than sex ed, right? But even then, it's like organs on a page of like,
right.
Yeah.
It's mechanics.
Yeah.
It's not all the other layers of everything.
Right. And then also being attractive, that only kicked in for me about putting on makeup and mm-hmm. all that because I remember Saved by the Bell, Kelly Kapowski.
Freaking Kelly,
right? Yeah. And I just thought like me, how I look, especially as an Asian American,
yeah.
compared to these white, gorgeous, cheerleader-like girls on TV, as well as in the magazines. I still remember like Teen Bop or whatever.
Yeah, 17 like, right? And oh my gosh, yeah. YM or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably where like the makeup knowledge started to come in. And you know, at the time there was no YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, I don't look like them. So maybe if I put on slather on makeup to look pretty, to look like Kelly Kapowski, you know?
Yeah.
In me, I just felt I was not pretty or attractive. I think maybe that's when I started formulating my thoughts. If I wasn't getting attention mm-hmm. from boys, that meant I wasn't pretty. Because you started to see that through media and as well as other girls in your in your school. Like, oh, she's so pretty. That's why all the guys like her.
Yeah.
So I started to formulate that in like, I want to be pretty and that I'm significant if boys like me.
Right.
Because everyone's talking about how this girl, how all the boys like her and she has all this attention. She's, you know, put on a pedestal.
By boys and girls, like everybody.
Exactly.
It's power dynamics to the max and it starts very early, like you're saying.
Right. And there's also in that, I guess, innocent state of like status in that way, right? Mm-hmm. The popular boy. Mm-hmm. If he notices you, suddenly you're more important.
Right.
And then I realized, yeah, looking back, it wasn't necessarily because I liked how smart he was or qualities about his personality and stuff. I mean, maybe slightly, but that definitely wasn't important.
Right.
And I guess I didn't really realize that until college, to be honest, to really sink in about what was really important, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Was that the same for you?
100%. Yeah. It's so simple when you look back on it. But that's, again, the mind of a child is, you know, and again, I'm speaking on myself, but I've seen it. Everyone wants to be loved. I mean, this is what I know in my 30s, that we want to be loved, and love comes in different forms and a lot of different forms of validation. And I think when you're exploring sexuality, you're kind of having this awakening to your who you are, what turns you on, whether that's sexual or whether that's as a person. Like, do you like art? Do you like music? Do you like, who are you? And your sexuality is a huge part of that. It's a huge right. part of that. I was very lucky to have boys who did like me since I was a kid, but I had a mean brother who's my best friend now, aww. But and my dad who made fun of me about my looks all the time. So I had a very mixed, confused time when I was a young kid, because in one way, guys would say like, oh, you're really pretty, and like send me letters and stuff. And I was like, this is pretty.
Wow.
This is where it's so sad and mean, but like several of them were from guys that I didn't like. It's not from the guy that I wanted to send me a letter, but
that's
it's
not mean.
It's still attention. Well, I feel mean because I was a jerk about it. Like, it's like, why are you giving me this? Like, such a brat. Like, oh, it makes me cringe.
But we were young. I think that's just like not understanding.
Yeah, for
the
sure.
consequences or the ramifications of how that makes somebody feel.
Right, right. I was just in my very like self-absorbed, immature state as a kid, and I had some sensitivity. I wasn't a complete jerk, but I kind of rebuffed that, and I really sought after the attention of the guy, right? Like whoever, the Zach Morris of that era. That's what the attention that I wanted. And so, and then also I had a lot of insecurities, because it does matter what you hear from the people closest to you. The fact that my dad and my brother were pretty mean, like objectively, I'll say they were really mean about the things that they said, the ways they made fun of me, the specifics of what they made fun of. They're still things that I deal with to this day. Like, I can't get rid of my self-consciousness, like, about my nose. Like, I don't have a straight nose. I've always had this, like, curve. And my dad, like, made fun of me when I was 9 and said, like, oh. And I get it from his side of the family. He's like, oh, you hate Coke Daddy. He's like, you need a nose job. And I was like, and I was 9? Never conscious of that or the shape of my nose until that exact moment. And I've never not thought about it since then. Like,
it's those things that stick, yeah. you know? It is so, and it's at that age where it starts formulating. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this part of me is not
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And this is a part of why I'm not whatever.
This is why it matters. Like, it does really matter about not being treating your child like a fragile snowflake, but to be aware that we go through phases of life and being able to be ready to handle certain types of discussions or commentary. And I think before you're like in high school, it's a very sensitive time. You are more fragile in that way. But like my weight and like my facial features, even though I had validation from these boys around me yeah. that said, oh, Christine, you know, my name's Christine too. But they were like, Christine, you're so pretty and XYZ. And I was just like, eat it up like candy because I wanted that and it felt great. But other part of me was so insecure. And I was just like, you're like lying. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Sometimes I took yeah. it as an insult. I was like, don't make fun of me. That's really mean. Don't tell me I'm pretty when I'm not.
Wow. Yeah.
It's layered, layers and layers.
I mean, that makes total sense where you had mixed ideas of how you look like and what that meant to the world. Because the men in your life growing up, being your brother and your dad, had that approach of making fun of you. And then so not being able to build that self-confidence in just being you, and that's enough. Mm-hmm. And then having that seed planted.
Yeah.
So yeah. underlying, no matter what, like you've already intaken and believe that.
Yeah.
So no matter what anybody says, if you don't believe it yourself, then it's just like, that's your perspective.
Then that's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's fact to you. You grow up, that's the truth, you know, and until the therapy or the, you know, the yeah. meditation, all the things that we deal with as adults to kind of undo the programming that we get as children. I mean, it's kind of poetic in a way. I think that it really did shape me in a lot of the things that happened. But so I'm so grateful to talk to people like you, Christine, who can take this very complex thing and make it a little bit simpler and more okay. Like, this is stuff that we all deal with. This is stuff that we all have our own versions of, right?
Yeah.
Because you're saying even with you, like how you didn't get the boobs. Like, yeah. there are these specific expectations. It seemed like even though you and I both grew up in very conservative homes, we still saw the world and we still had these ideas of like what is sexy and what's pretty.
Yeah.
And then we measured ourselves compared to that.
Yes.
right?
Absolutely. And that's the thing about growing older in your 20s and 30s, when your level of awareness and consciousness about what you say to yourself really starts to blossom. And then you kind of trace it back to like, oh man, this stemmed from, when I was 9. Mm-hmm. And where did this idea and concept come from? And you realize how long you've carried it with you, mm-hmm. and how it's morphed and changed. So I realized, even just hearing you say that, this is why conversation is so great, you know, because like hearing you say that made me tap into. So I think for me, I share that image of just me not being beautiful, whether it's through media. I also mm-hmm. was made fun of in middle school too. And that's the thing where, you know, you hang out with boys, but boys also treat you like one of the guys. So they make fun of you, you know, in that way.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, very much so.
Exactly. So I got made fun of about how, like, you're not like the other girls, you know? You're not pretty and all that. So
I'm making faces people can't see, but I want to, like, getting violent against these little boys who didn't know better, but still, are you kidding me?
I think you just thought that it was funny. You know, it's always funny to make fun of somebody else in that sense.
Yeah.
And I think inwardly, I just always felt like, I'm not as pretty as this person, Kelly Kapowski, or other girls in my school. So then when I started to become aware of like, okay, middle school, high school, I want to have a boyfriend because that's the cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. I realized that even through college, my sexuality had a lot to do with me trying to overcompensate for how I didn't think I was attractive. So I was always afraid that whatever guy I was with would ultimately leave me because they would find somebody else that's prettier or mm-hmm. smarter, whatever. So I think when it came to the relationships, a lot of them, looking back, it was very one-sided because I was trying to overcompensate, you know, either by trying to give too much or trying to push them away.
Yeah, it's a funny push-pull, right?
Right. Just like you said, when like they'd be like, oh, you're so beautiful. You'd be like, shut up. That's not true. The same way when the guy would show me love, I'd be like, no, you know. Right. But I think deep down it's because I was really insecure about just who I was. Even now, I mean, to this day, I've talked about like how I still battle self-image and physical image as well.
Yeah.
It's something as women, I think, and maybe, you know, guys can chime in with their thoughts. I think for women, there's a really big stress about the way you look.
100%.
Right? And your status, and not status, but just who you are. Like, you're based on what
your value.
Your value. That's the word. Yeah. Your value is really based on your physical appearance. There's so much emphasis on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving past high school, going into our 20s and stuff, how did that impact your life when you start to realize, I don't know, whatever truths you started to realize of being a woman?
I've had a very eventful life. So prior to 20, I did go through quite a bit of life I wasn't ready for, but I kind of, you know, who's ever ready for anything?
That's such a quotable thing. Who is ever ready for anything?
Yeah, yes. None of us are. We're never ready, you know, but you just go. I did grow up in a really Baptist Christian household, and I talk about this on my podcast, and it's a discussion that I want to unpack more with fellow Korean Americans or Asian Americans who grew up in the church, because I think there's a very specific synergy of chaos that happens when you have this like really patriarchal culture that's very, very like filial piety, that is all about elders and not about ever speaking back to anybody who is above you on the totem pole, or, you know, there's a lot of these very, very specific traits about Asian culture that is like the perfect feeding ground to breed abuse. And so I don't think it's ever been like an intentional thing, but I think that dynamic of being very reverent to people who have greater authority than you, a lot just based on age. But then there's definitely a gender disparity, that it's an unspoken thing that men have a huge upper hand in a lot of circumstances. They imbue each other with a lot of power. So that happens even in leadership positions, whether that's political or in business or in church.
Right.
A lot of the people who make the decisions and make the call, a lot of them were men. There were some women there. But again, it's highly influenced by the thoughts, opinions, and desires of the men. That shaped my life tremendously, because you're talking about the Bible, where they're literally pulling Bible quotes and really building a narrative of women needing to be pure. And that, again, coincides with the Asian image of women, which is you're to be silent, you're to be seen, not heard. You know, you're supposed to be pleasant to look at, you're supposed to be helpful.
Right.
None of, like, I realized so much in terms of my life that there's a lot of reasons, very simple reasons why I've had very limited boundaries in my life, because my life was shaped so much about my utility to other people.
Oh my God, yes.
It was never about my value as like my intelligence even. It's like, how helpful are you? How kind are you? And to be helpful and kind is great, you know, and it's great to have an attitude of humility and service. But if that's all you are and there's no space for you to be your own person, where does that person ever learn to say no?
Oh, yes.
Where does that person ever learn to have a backbone to say, that made me uncomfortable. I don't like the way you're treating me. You can't do that to me. I don't want to be here. I don't like you. Like,
right.
There's no room for that. There was none of that that was fostered, you know, as I grew up.
Oh my God. I mean, the whole thing that you just said right now could be a personal essay that should be on a plaque for everyone to see. And I was yassing through everything that you were saying because it's so true. Like, it runs so deep. Like you said, it's so layered. And then when we talk about like Time's Up, Me Too, and all of that, there's a lot of confusion from, you know, different people, like I guess men who are just like, what do you mean?
She went along with it. Like,
yeah. Like, she never said anything. And then how can we believe her? And, you know, I'm not trying to dismiss anybody's view of life, because obviously they were brought up in a world where they didn't see that, you know? And we live, as women, live in a very different world.
Yeah.
Where we experience life in a very different way and have been. So everything that you're saying about why we've been conditioned, like, this is why we're at where we're at.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's not just something that women, we just got together all of a sudden, we're like, you know what? We're going
to
take down.
It's really fun to mess with everybody just to like be difficult. Like, yeah, that's what I've been saying. Like, I'm angry for reasons. I'm still unpacking why I'm so angry. But there, it comes from experience. It comes from the microaggressions. It comes from like all these tiny, it's like death by a million cuts. You know what I mean? And it's feeling like there were so many circumstances in which I just wanted to exist as a human being, to be respected and honored and valued just as much as the next person. And for some reason, largely based on my gender or the fact that I'm Asian, you know, Asian women have a different existence in the world. You know, I felt like that wasn't the case. I was not somebody that deserved to be honored or valued or respected or treated well, you know?
Wow. And that was part one of my conversation with Minji. We just barely got started, you guys. I always cut it off at the good part. It's so you guys can come back and hang out with me another week. Thank you so much to Minji for being so open, even in just this first part of the conversation. I know this is a difficult topic to talk about. Thank you guys for sticking through it and being open-minded and listening with an open heart. I also want to let you guys know that there are two more episodes left for this season, part two of this conversation, and then one more episode. So yeah, just to give you guys a heads up. But do not worry, do not fear. If you guys don't know already, I have another podcast with my friend Regina called Perfectly Imperfect, and that is actually coming back next week. Oh my God. And if you want more information on where you can listen to Minji's podcast, first of all, and you want to follow her on Instagram, I will link all that information down below. So thank you guys so much, and I can't wait to talk to you guys next week. Love you. Bye.